Hey writers, it's KJ. This week, we're continuing our book launch series, and Serena is schooling me on getting all my social media ready for a fiction launch. At our sponsor, Author Accelerator, they're offering some different schooling this month, June of 2020, with classes in book coaching. There are introductory classes, master classes, and, this fascinates me, a special class this month on coaching historical fiction. I love that they're getting so specific, and I would love to listen in on that one. If you're intrigued, find out more at authoraccelerator.com.
Is it recording?
Now it's recording.
Yay!
Go ahead.
This is the part where I stare blankly at the microphone. I don't remember what I'm supposed to be doing.
All right, let's start over.
Awkward pause.
I'm going to wrestle some papers.
Okay.
Now one, two, three. Okay.
I'm KJ Delantonia, and this is Hashtag Am Writing, the podcast about writing all the things, short things, long things, fiction, nonfiction, essays, book proposals, pitches. In short, this is, as I say every week, the podcast about settling down and getting your writing work done.
This is Jess Leahy. I am the author of The Gift of Failure and the forthcoming The Addiction Inoculation. And you can find my work at the New York Times and the Washington Post and the Atlantic and various other spots.
I'm Serena Bowen, the author of 35 romance novels, and the most recent one is called Sure Shot.
I am KJ Delantonia, author of the novel The Chicken Sisters, coming out July 1st of 2020, and the book How to Be a Happier Parent, out in paperback now, as well as the former editor of the Motherload blog and column at the New York Times, where I am still a contributor.
That's who we are.
And yeah. And this week, we're continuing our How to Launch a Book series, in which we sort of try to cover all the different arenas of things that you can get ready for before your book launches. We've done Amazon, BookBub, and Goodreads. We've done websites. And now we're going to turn our attention to social media.
That beast called social media.
Such a powerful tool sometimes. Well, I can say I know for a fact that when I talk to authors who are sort of contemplating the social media sort of for the first time in a professional context, they're just so overwhelmed. They're like, do I have to do all of it? So Serena, do we have to do all of it? Do we have to do Pinterest and Instagram and Facebook? And do we have to be good at all of it? Because that's the thing that seems to overwhelm authors.
Absolutely.
From the get-go.
We'll find it overwhelming because it is overwhelming and you don't have to do it all.
Oh, good.
So
you said absolutely, and I'm like, no. Absolutely.
Absolutely, you have to do all of it. How's your LinkedIn looking?
You absolutely have my permission not to do all of it.
Phew, I thought I was going to go have to learn TikTok or something like that.
Oh, could you please? Because I would really love that. Yeah. So, of course, everybody has their favorite. So you really need to ask yourself two questions. And Jess, you've been super articulate about this too. Like, the two questions really are, which platform is your favorite, or which platform right. makes you hate it the least? And mm-hmm. the corollary question, which is almost as important, which platform is your people? So
yeah, where is your audience?
Yeah. And you and I have discovered that our answers to this question are like 180 degrees different.
Yeah,
whereas you talk to educators all the time on Twitter. And my audience is really on Facebook and Instagram.
Yep. How did you figure that out? For me, it was fairly obvious from the get-go because I think I started learning about personal learning networks and realizing, oh, that's where all the teachers were. And I was using it for teaching. But then, of course, when I started writing something that was about teaching, it was sort of a natural fit for me. But did you have to go looking and sort of figuring out where all those people were for you?
I really did have to pay attention because there are a lot of authors on Twitter. But at one point, somebody said to me, Twitter is where I go to talk to other authors, but I reach my readers on Facebook. And I thought, okay, well, that feels a little bit familiar, but I'm a really analytical person and I like data. So, of course, I've been using all of these sites at least partly for kind of a long time. And I realized that my Squarespace website and every website does this in some capacity. You just have to find it. But it has really good data about this. It's called Traffic Sources is the page that I look at. And under social media, in the last 30 days, you can see, or maybe I'm at 7 days here, but over some period of recent time, I have gotten 816 clicks from Facebook, 158 clicks from Goodreads, and 78 clicks from Twitter, and 18 clicks from Pinterest. So that tells a really clear story immediately about what's working. And of course, we post fewer links on Instagram, and my Instagram shows up on this other page because I use a program for this, and I'm getting like 200 off Instagram.
Wait, what do you mean when you say that your Instagram is showing up on another page and you use an app for that?
Oh, because Instagram, well, yeah, let's just dive right into Instagram because lots of authors love it. So anyway, what I was trying to say is that you can be given permission to cut one of these out if you can see in hard numbers where people are finding you. And of course, a lot of the links that I post on social media do not lead back to my website. So this is just a little subset. But I still find it quite telling, and it gave me permission to walk away from Twitter without really looking back. And I actually changed my account there. It says that it's a Serena Bowen update account, infrequently monitored, because I'm not part of the conversation, and I didn't, you know, it basically says this is a promo account, you know, do with that what you will. I don't expect to have a grand and, you know, wonderful following there because I have chosen not to pursue it.
You know what's really interesting? I have a column up in TweetDeck, one for you and one for KJ, because, you know, I like to keep tabs on what people are saying about my peeps. And occasionally I'll find stuff before you guys see it. But what I often see are cross posts from Goodreads with people, a tweet saying how many, you know, what percentage they are through him via Goodreads. And it's really clear that people are letting Goodreads cross post to Twitter for them. And that's the majority of what I see from readers regarding your books, which was a really interesting realization to me that that it's sort of not that the readers are necessarily there, but that they're letting Goodreads cross post for them.
Yeah. And can we just back up to the part where you said you have a column on TweetDeck, but that column isn't, that column is a special thing. That's a search column, right?
Right, right. Meaning I have a search column on your, with quotes around your full name and a column for you on, you know, at Serena Bowen Updates or whatever your handle is on Twitter, just because I, you know, I kind of like to just know what's happening with my people.
That's amazing.
It's fun. I like to see what people are reading of your stuff. And, you know, it's always fun to report back that when people are saying nice things.
You know what? I at one point had a column like that, but I found that I didn't always want to know all the things that were showing up there.
Yeah, that's probably true. I've seen some things that I didn't necessarily want to see, but I also saw that's how I found out about that thing where I was one of my essays was on the SAT because people weren't tagging my handle on Twitter. They were just saying mean things and making memes about me using my name and sometimes misspelling it. But either way, that's how I found out that I was on the SAT and that all the high schoolers in the country hated me that year.
Wow. So yeah. So maybe we should move away.
Useful.
And talk about. It is useful. Well, actually, we're still on Twitter, so let's finish Twitter, Jess, because I want to know something that I'm not good at on Twitter because, like I said, I don't use it that much. But how do you use hashtags to find your audience?
Oh, I actually don't. It depends. I use hashtags on Twitter for education stuff simply because there are chats that happen, like more chats than I can even tell you. If you do a Google search on education hashtag Twitter chats for education on Google, you will get this table that has, hundreds of Twitter chats. So occasionally I'll use them for things like, you know, I need a particular book for a kid a particular age, and then I'll hashtag a couple of literacy or, you know, reading or teaching literacy hashtags. But I actually don't use hashtags very often on Twitter.
Okay.
It's not so much my jam.
There's not a lot. It's not like Instagram. There's not a lot of room for them. People don't. You just use a hashtag unless you're joking.
There are exceptions, though. I mean, like, if a big education conference is going on, I'll throw up a column for that education conference and follow people at that conference so that I can see what's going on and find out what people are talking about and things like that. But for the most part, yeah, I don't really use hashtags. I don't use hashtags the way people use hashtags in Instagram. It seems to be a bigger deal in Instagram than it is on Twitter, at least for me. That may not be the case for everyone, but definitely for me, hashtags are not as much thing on Twitter.
Okay.
Now, I think that the reason to use them on Twitter tends to be because you are being part of a conversation mm-hmm. that is around a hashtag. So it's often political, but not always. I mean, that's why. Whereas on Instagram, because people rarely reshare, because Instagram makes it hard, I will follow certain hashtags, and then from those hashtags, I might pick new account. I might find new accounts to follow because, for example, I'm actively looking to follow people who write about the kinds of books that I write. So I follow a hashtag for that. But I don't do that in Twitter for a lot of reasons, one of which is that I just don't go on Twitter anymore because it stopped being
fun. Absolutely just misspoke, though, because in looking for this new audience for the new book, I actually do have a list around people in recovery, and then I also do have a column for hashtag recovery or hashtag sobriety or hashtag sober. So that I misspoke. I am... Because I don't know the audience as well in the recovery world as I do in the education world, I do occasionally go mining and looking around just to see who's who, who's talking about what, who's reputable, who's not, sort of who's in the conversation. And those hashtags can occasionally help me access that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I think the thing for Twitter is that if you're a nonfiction author, especially, mm-hmm. but it probably works in fiction as well, is that you can end up in a conversation with an expert that you might want to reach, or a fellow author that you might want to reach. Because if they're putting out a tweet and you reply to it, mm-hmm. it's just different. Then they might mm-hmm. tweet back, and because they're actually actively on there, well, depending on whether or not they've scheduled their tweets, but usually the kind of thing you'd reply to isn't that. So there's an opportunity for connection there that's a little bit different, but I don't know. It's sort of more general. It's not a lot to do with launching your book.
Exactly. Well, for me, though, there is the one thing I do, though, is if I find someone who's squarely in my demographic, squarely someone who I really am interested in following on Twitter and who I think really have follow some interesting people in whether it's recovery or education, I will go through who they follow and sort of say, oh, look, there's some people I don't follow, and follow those people. So that can be really useful, too. If you're new to a field, going and looking. So, for example, if you were really interested in like COVID stuff and PPE, there's this woman, Dr. Megan Ranney right now, who's, you know, out there in the media a lot. And Megan would be a great person to go follow because then look at who she follows, because she probably follows a really reputable group of people within that field. So that's a really great thing to do, too. If you wanted to find out, like, for example, if you were writing your first novel and it happened to be a women's fiction novel, go look to see who, like Jennifer Weiner or KJ Antonia or Jodi Picoult, who do they follow? And obviously there might be some interesting people for you to follow in there as well. So that's been really useful for me.
But to specifically bring us back to book launches, I will say one thing that I did on Twitter with my nonfiction book launch, and I think, Jess, you may have done some of the same thing, is to tweet everyone I quote in the book. So when I was launching my nonfiction, I prepared in advance a bunch of tweets that were like, you know, thanks for your help with How to Be a Happier Parent, Jessica Leahy. It's out now. They were a little better than that. And I had those all revved up and ready to go and either scheduled or not. So that, it's a way to let people that were helpful to you know so that hopefully they will share. So that's one way to use Twitter. And another way is to ask other people to tweet for you.
Right. And, you know, our groups of friends are can be relied on to really boost us if we need them. But it's been really fun, you know, watching, for example, when a friend has a book, when Catherine Newman's book was first up on Amazon and it's coming out, you know, it'll be out by the time this podcast goes up. She did that. She said, I want to thank, you know, at Jess Leahy for helping me, supporting me in this book by blurbing it and blah, blah, blah. And that sort of reminds me, oh yeah, I really support this book. I want to help. So that's, you're right. That's a really good way to do it as well.
Right. And so then another thing that you can do within Twitter is to create tweets about the book that people that are on your email list could send out. And you can use, I'm going to have forgotten the social media share link
generator.
You're
the master of this, though.
That's it. So if you go to, I am the master of share link generator. If you go to share link generator, you can write a tweet that then you can create a link and you can put it in an email. You can put it in a blog post. You can put it almost anywhere and say, click to tweet. And if someone clicks that, then their tweet pops up. It's editable. So what I do with that is I send it out to a bunch of people that I know, but maybe my email list, maybe my launch team, maybe just 20 people that I have collected. And I say, it would be awesome for me if you would tweet about the book. Here, I've made it easy. Click here and you get an editable tweet about the book with all the links. And the person clicks and it says, hey, I'm so excited to welcome KJ's new book, The Chicken Sisters, into the world. And they can change that to, you know, I've read this and I love it. Or, I hated this. I never want to hear from this author ever again. You know, they can change it to anything that they want, but it's already there and it has the links and it makes life so much easier. And I always kind of boggle at people who don't, who just send me an email and say, would you mind tweeting about the book? And to do that, I have to go find the link. And then I have to think of something to say. And I have to go on Twitter. I mean, there's like four steps in there. Whereas with Share Link Generator, you can make it a one-click deal. It also works for Facebook, but we're not on Facebook yet.
All right. We done with Twitter?
I would like to propose one last thought on Twitter that's actually applicable to all of the platforms we're discussing today, which is that by the time any author gets to her launch day, she feels as though she has been talking about nothing except her book since the beginning of time, and she is a little bit sick of herself and the whole topic. But I would just like to say that Twitter specifically has a sort of short half-life of each tweet. And even if you feel you've been discussing your book way too much, launch day is not the moment to change your behavior. Like, it's the one day when everyone will forgive you for talking about your book launch a whole lot. So, you know, hang tight and put out yet another tweet about your book on that launch day, because that is your moment. And not that many people will see that tweet, even if you are sick of yourself.
Right. And to save yourself the agony of spending your launch day writing 10 different tweets about your book, write them ahead of time.
Awesome.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, then you've just got them. Put them in I've got a Google spreadsheet going in which I'm just dumping, a possible post or, you know, make a file, make the images that you're going to use, have them all ready, and just know what you're going to put out there so that you don't have to generate it while you're sort of feeling that, oh my God, I've been talking about this forever, angst.
I actually have I have this week coming, I believe is my copy edited manuscript, and I have a schedule for when I'll get, like, that has to go back in, and then I'll have another date coming when I'll hopefully get my galley proofs. And my plan is to go to those looking at my copy edits with a highlighter so that I can highlight a few tweetable, Instagrammable, quotable things that I can make Canva cards for, that sort of stuff from the get-go, because I'm probably not going to want to go through the manuscript with a fine-tooth comb again after I do it for all these edit things. So why not do both at the same time?
I did that with the novel as well. And
so smart.
Serena, you do something a little different. You do sort of the you know, here's what you can expect to find, which I always think is really fun, which I am also doing now.
Well, Jess just mentioned Canva cards, and let's just spend a minute on Canva because it's a really useful tool of mine. And Canva, Canva is a graphic design program, at least that's what it calls itself. And there are many. There's one called Crello. There's several versions of this beast. You know, PicMonkey, lots of places where you can use templates and make cute designs fairly easily, even if you're not a Photoshop human. So, but what I love about Canva specifically, and I actually have the paid version of it, is not only is it good at designing stuff, but it will save it for you for later. So when I'm feeling it in terms of promoting my book and I'm not sick of myself on a particular day, I can go into Canva and mess around with things like quotes from the book or thank you for your support or anything that has to do with that design. And you can actually make pages, each Canva document, you can just duplicate the thing you made and delete the quote and put in a new one. So it's really good at sort of holding your design brain in one spot.
And you can resize it for something else. So you can duplicate it and then resize it into Twitter size or Facebook size or LinkedIn size or Instagram story size instead of Instagram post size.
Right. I think the resizing is part of the paid portion, which, or at least it used to be, but that was definitely something that I enjoyed getting after I became a whatever it's called, pro member. It's not very expensive either. It's like the whole year costs $200 or something like that. So Canva is definitely a great tool for when you're switching from Twitter to Facebook or you want to play around with a checklist. Like those checklists you were just talking about that I make are also wonderful in Canva. And another thing I do, if you have chapters in the book that you're launching, and those chapters have titles. I like to make countdown chapter titles because as you hurtle through that month towards your book launch, it's great to be newsy. And so I will make, like, let's say chapter 8 of my book is called, Is That Really a Duck? I will make a Canva card that says, in 8 days, I will bring you chapter 8. Is that really a duck? And then the next day, I'll have one to post that says, in 7 days, I can bring you chapter 7. The duck went fishing, you know, and on and on and on, because I've taken the trouble to give my chapters funny titles or informational ones. And it just gives you something newsy to put out into the world as you count down to your terrifying book launch.
I did that with nonfiction, too. I did it with How to Be a Happier Parent. And it was fun, and it was helpful, and it was just felt like something to say. So yeah, I did exactly that. 2 days to chapter 2. Chores. More fun if someone else does them, and your child should. And I made little cards, and it kept me busy, and it gave me something to say. So that was good.
I just want to underline this whole planning ahead thing, because if you are waiting until the very end to think about doing these things, you're going to just be so overwhelmed. So the clear message here is be thinking about text tidbits, strategies, things you want to do ahead of time so that you're not overwhelming yourself, you know, the week of pub date.
Definitely.
Because that would be insane.
And let's talk a little about the goal of all of this. It's not going to sell millions of books.
No.
You're only probably reaching. So when you ask other people to share on social media, you're reaching their followers. And when you share, you're mostly reaching your own followers and some retweets. But I think something important to remember is that people need to see the book more than once, usually, before they head over and click and buy. And sometimes they don't even remember where they saw it or how they saw it. It just becomes familiar because you've posted a lot of imagery around it, but you haven't made it annoying. You've made it fun. You've made it entertaining. So when people see that title, when they're surfing a book site or hopefully in a bookstore, it makes them go, oh, yeah, I've been thinking about that one. Or maybe, you know, it's chapter 2 days to the duck takes a walk is the one that finally gets them to click.
I definitely hear that a lot, that, you know, we've talked about this before, that it's the repetition, and sometimes it's the second, third, or fourth time that someone says, oh yeah, that book that I meant to buy the first time I heard about it, but didn't. So, Twitter.
So, to some extent, that all means that if you don't do it, like, during launch, doing it during launch week is just an excuse to do it. If you don't do it during launch week, fine. You know, the next week, you do something different. Do other, you know, create a bunch of things and start putting your book out there. It's not, I guess, we don't need to panic if we don't get it all out there on launch day.
There have been, and you know what's so interesting about the social media thing too, is that there have been all kinds of attempts. There was that thunderclap thing that was a couple of years ago where you'd ask people a favor to all tweet and post something to social media at the same exact time. And I don't think that that had any kind of effect. And it was a huge amount of effort and it sounded like you were getting something done, but I don't know that it actually had any major effect. So when we talk about these things that you're supposed to do on social media or that you could do on social media, I think all of these things are, we're not saying that you have to do all of these things and they're going to have a major impact on book sales, but every little bit, you know, can help. And as we always like to say, we don't want to get 6 months out from book release and say to ourselves, oh, I could have, you know, I could have done that other thing. We wanted to be able to say, you know, we did all the things that we were under our control that we could do to help our book do well on launch day. But that thunderclap thing was very weird, I think, anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that.
It was an attempt to make virality happen where it wasn't destined to.
Exactly. To force a lot of noise all at the same time in the hopes that it would catch fire. And I don't, you know, I just mixed metaphors, but I don't know that that was a particularly effective thing to do. And I'd like to be sparing in what I ask other people to do to help me out. And being a part of something like that wasn't something I was particularly interested in.
Right. I don't think I once participated, but it was an interesting experiment.
Yep. All right. Anything else that you want to add to this discussion about Twitter or Instagram?
Well, we should... Well,
we didn't do Instagram yet.
Right. We should do Instagram, which is growing faster than the other services that we've been talking about.
I guess, sorry, in my head, I kind of thought of about that we had sort of done Instagram because in my head, I associate, for me anyway, Canva with Instagram. So mentally, I had gone there. So my apologies.
That's okay.
Okay. All right. Now you talk because clearly my head is in the wrong place. Oh,
gosh, you guys, we are such a mess. We need to just own that it is June 2nd and the world is blowing up and we are all upset about it and none of us have slept because we are really... This is all like it all still matters.
Yeah, I got about an hour last night.
And we all love it. But man, we are flaky. And with good reason, right?
It's a hard day.
It's a hard day.
Okay. Serena, Instagram.
Okay.
Go.
Well, Instagram is a platform where sharing doesn't really happen very often. So you kind of have this one moment to put something visual and beautiful in front of people and hope that it sticks with them. But discovery on Instagram also works a little differently than it does on other platforms, which is that hashtags really matter on Instagram. So before you are launching your book, you want to figure out what hashtags people are using who are looking at books like yours. And I have a little collection of these. I keep it handy.
There's a lot of them for authors and writers. There's books on Instagram. There's a ton of them. So good for you for having a list.
Well, I have several lists, honestly. So if I'm talking about my own book that's coming, I will use Book Addict, Book Nerd, Book Worm, Book Love, Book Lover, Contemporary Romance, Romance Reads, IG Reads, One Click, Always Reading. You get the idea. There's a lot of these.
And let me guess that you have a list that is pastable.
Oh, yes.
So where do you keep that?
I happen to keep it in Notes, that little yellow app on all things Apple that is just really handy. But you could use Google Keep for this. You could use any program that you keep handy.
I use Evernote.
Okay.
I use Evernote. And I have thought about using keystrokes because since Instagram really requires that you use the phone, you know, you can't... You can't post to Instagram except on a phone. So if you go within an iPhone, at least, into General, and you go to Keyboard, you go to Text Replacement, you can, I actually have done this, I just haven't taken advantage of having done it. You can make a series of letters like Blig, I don't know why, I have Book Lover Instagram probably, and put them all in there. And then when you type Blig, they will all pop up anytime you you type Blig. It's also an interesting way to find...
oh my God, that's so brilliant.
It's an interesting way to discover keystrokes that you did not realize, or, you know, things that you did not realize you accidentally put together frequently. Mm-hmm. I had one for a while that was something I typoed a lot. And so every so often, oh, I know, I tried to use CC for my credit card. And then every time I said to someone, I'll CC you, I was throwing my credit card information into the email. That's not a good plan. Don't do that. But yeah, the keystrokes thing works really well.
For a long time after law school, I had, in law school, I had a capital C space would autofill the word Constitution, which gets in the way when you're, you know, writing other things that require just a capital C. So I had the word Constitution sprinkled through my emails there for a
Well, KJ taught me this nifty trick because actually I use it on Instagram too, which is that I have thank you and some longer phrases for thank you spelled out in German, French, Italian, and Portuguese because Instagram is a really international platform and at least half the tags that people are using for me on Instagram are in German, honestly. God bless German Instagrammers. So I have three different German phrases saved in those keystrokes that I apply when somebody takes some beautiful picture of my German book and tags me in the post so that I can be thankful without writing danke, 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 danke all day long.
Yeah, that's really brilliant. And I'm actually going to need your help because I got tagged in a couple of things that I needed a Portuguese thank you for and I didn't have it. So that's really smart and really thoughtful.
Obrigado, Jess.
Thank you very much.
Obrigado.
Yeah. So that the whole keystroke thing and being made to create stuff on your phone is kind of a drag, thanks Instagram. You can actually hack your way around this by installing a Chrome plugin that fools your Instagram into thinking you're on a mobile device when you're not.
Sneaky.
It's also unwieldy. It doesn't work great, but it works. It is a workaround, and if you don't want to go on your phone, you can use it, but it's not fantastic.
Right. But my current setup is that I probably have the picture on my phone anyway because I use, well, an iPad to create a lot of imagery. And then I type whatever I want onto my notes on a laptop, and then I just open it on my phone and copy there and paste, or I rely on Bluetooth to copy from one device and paste into another because I am never, ever composing an Instagram caption on my phone. Like, that way lies the abyss. Like, my thumbs are not that good at typing. It's just not happening. So I also, there's several ways to keep your Instagram feed looking good. And you don't need to do that. Like, you don't need to become obsessive about the beauty of your Instagram feed, but you know, there are moments when I want to kind of work hard on this. So I have an app called Preview that I use to look at what the grid will look like before I post. And some people use one called Planoly. And there's also Later, which is a posting to Instagram app. And if you change your Instagram to a business account, you will be allowed to schedule via some of these third-party things so that it could post automatically. I don't actually do that. I don't need to post to Instagram so often that scheduling is super helpful for me. But I know that a lot of people like to do it that way.
But if you want to see a beautiful Instagram account, go check out Serena Bowen's Instagram account. Because not only your account, the gold standard seems to be what some book bloggers and some romance readers in particular seem to do for the authors that they love, and the people who create these gorgeous Instagram post for you just blow me away. I'm amazed by the kind of artful creations that that your readers create and that you create for your books. They're really beautiful.
They blow me away too.
Well, you can use those when someone else makes a beautiful image of your book or just makes an image of your book. Because my goodness, thank you very much. You can do a couple of things. You can post it to your story, which is only polite, I think, and quite common. But you can also use an app that will allow you to repost. And in this case, I use Repost. And you can, if you're using an app like that, then when somebody else posts about the book, you can take their post and use it in your feed, thus, you know, adding to your the number of images that you have without you having to create an image, which is really helpful. Right. And there's the opportunity to sort of say, you know, thanks, Bookstagrammer, for, you know, writing this lovely thing about my book. And then you can share the lovely thing.
What's always weird is when someone thanks me for posting something beautiful they made about my book to my story. And I'm always like, oh my gosh, thank you. This is the most beautiful thing ever. And it's such an incredible honor to be able to repost that. So it's a wonderful, it's also just a great way to sort of connect with readers. I love it.
Repost and those apps, we should note, also will copy the entire caption that the other person wrote to the clipboard.
Including the hashtags.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So that not only are you assured an easy way of giving credit to the person who created that thing, but it's very easy to share. So, because we never want to get into trouble and have any creator think that we've stolen their work for our own benefit.
No.
But of course,
that's the nice thing about using the app instead of screenshotting it.
Right.
Is that it makes it very clear where you got it. And it's just socially acceptable.
Yep. My other trick for working ahead on Instagram is that I don't commonly have more than a small handful of paperback ARCs to give away ahead of launch. So I went to Moo and I made a bunch of these beautiful 5x7 postcards. Like I'll do like 150 5x7 postcards of the book cover. And I will mail them all over the world because, like I said, Instagrammers are very international. And then I will see those postcards pop up all over Instagram during launch as well.
Nice.
And they, you know, they cost a lot less than a paperback ARC. And it's honestly really about the shipping. Like I can put a $1.15 stamp on one of these cards and send it all the way to Australia, whereas shipping a book to Australia costs $25. So there you go.
Right. And that sort of gets around, you know, if you want to be sharing ARCs, they can be digital, but there is something that people can take a picture of, which is really nice. People love having something to take a picture. I love having something to take a picture of.
Awesome.
Oh, so yeah, that's Instagram.
Yep.
Instagram, we really do love, Leo. I don't do LinkedIn, but I have some friends that do it really well, and so I'm just going to ask them when my book comes out, would you post this on LinkedIn, please? Except then I feel bad because one of them in particular is always like, hey, share this on LinkedIn. I'm like, oh, really? I don't know how to even log in. But it's just not my thing. But if you are a business writer, it probably should be.
Definitely.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. The business world is very much about LinkedIn. And, you know, I will post things there, but I actually don't see a ton of interaction with the stuff that I post there. So it's often an afterthought for me. Well, are you two even still there?
Yeah, not really.
All right. Can we talk about what we've been reading? Pretty, pretty please.
Absolutely. Sure. Has anyone been able to read?
Well, I'm still doing the listening.
I will note before we talk about what we've been reading that we didn't talk about Facebook.
I think that's a whole.
Just saying.
I think that's a whole long discussion in itself. I mean, that's just me, and mainly because I hear Serena talking about the stuff that she does there, and she's on a whole other level with Facebook. And I sort of have the feeling that that's its own episode in and of itself.
Okie dokie. There we go.
Because there's a lot. There's
Stay
a lot.
Stay tuned. We got one more book launch thing to go.
All right. So.
Okay. What are we reading?
KJ, you have been doing a beautiful, beautiful job, by the way, speaking of Instagram, of talking about what you've been reading. And you've really done a great job of doing these capsule reviews of books. And you've sort of set a standard, I think, for me anyway, for understanding how to do a really quick review of a book. So I just wanted to tell you that I have been appreciating those a lot.
Why, thank you. I'm actually planning to up that game. So I've been creating a whole list of books that I want to make sure get shared. This is partly, you know, just the whole let's help make book launches still work. So I've got a whole great list of books that I want to share with people that are either books that I, you know I recommend and here's why, or books that I have had an arc of, or books that I'm super anxious to read. And I've been putting together ways to do that. So yeah, I've been having fun.
I enjoy seeing your smiling face show up on Instagram. It's fun. As for what I have been reading, it's been one of the other aspects of having my kids at home that's been really fun for me is that my son, my older son, and I have been reading the same book at the same time, which means that we get to talk about it. He's been reading it in print and I've been listening to it. I re-listened to Donna Tartt's The Secret History because he had never read it before. And we're rereading I'm rereading, he's reading for the first time, Middlesex by Jeffrey Eugenides. I never remember which one. But that's been really, really fun. It's been a really interesting opportunity to sort of have conversations with my kid about a book that I really enjoyed. So that's been fun.
Well, I finally got Where the Crawdads Sing and read that. I resisted it for a long time because everyone was reading it, and that makes me frustrated.
I've been resisting it too. Yeah,
it was not what I expected. That's a good thing. I think I was kind of expecting a literary exploration of the swamps of the South, and while it has that, and it's, you know, beautiful. Basically, whenever you tell me the prose is lyrical, I just want to run away because lyrical prose is not something that I am looking for. But you don't have to read this for its lyrical prose because it's actually a super plotty and interesting murder mystery as well as lyrical exploration of the swamps of the South. It's got a really interesting protagonist. It's a coming-of-age story, which, to be honest, is not my thing, but it's a really good one. And I love... This is a protagonist who takes care of herself, and I do like that. And that's so often in literary fiction not the case. I avoid the lyrical... things described as lovely lyrical literary prose because so often I find that it's a lovely lyrical literary story of somebody just sitting there not doing anything, and I find that frustrating. That is not this. So if you've been avoiding Where the Crawdads Sing and you like mysteries and coming of age stories and really fascinating protagonists, then check this one out.
I think it really says something about the three of us that we're so obstinate that we haven't gotten around to a book that has been monumentally popular simply because it was monumentally popular. It's sort of like people telling you what to read and pushing back. Yeah, I know.
I hate it. This is why I'm not in a book club. Exactly.
It's true. I'm not in one either.
Not my thing.
Funny you should mention that, but I am just starting a book called Pale Rider by Laura Spinney. Subtitle, The Spanish Flu of 1918 and How It Changed the World. And I'm reading it because my book club just chose it.
You sound so perky about it, but I can't imagine that you're feeling super perky about it.
No, I am. I think I'm ready. A month ago, I'm not sure I could have picked this up, but I think, you know, I think I'm ready.
Well, you go in and represent us all.
Oh, one other book that I'm reading that has been really interesting that has been recommended. It's in education circles in particular as a recommended reading book for teachers called How to Be an Anti-Racist. And that is a book that I need right now, mainly because I'm just trying to figure out how to be most helpful to my friends and to teachers and to students and to figure out when to keep my mouth shut and when to say the right thing. And How to Be Anti-Racist by Ibram X. Kendi has been an unbelievable listen. And if you do the audio, by the way, he reads it himself. And it starts with a story of when he got things really, really wrong. Like, he just tells this embarrassing story that makes him cringe. And it's a really great way to start the book off, because then I don't feel like I'm being lectured at by someone who always does the right thing. So it's been a really great listen.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really good. He also has a book called Stamped, by the way, that I noticed has been all over Twitter, because it is a great book for students to read. It's another book on the same topic, but for students to read. So that's my recommendation for this week.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, are we done for this week?
I think we're done. I think we're take us out of the oven done.
it's a hard day, and I'm going to try to stay away from the news and get some sanity for a little while before going back into another round of just checking in to see how the world is doing outside my house.
Anyway,
for social media, Instagram, Twitter, we'll do one on Facebook, and check out the show notes for some of the stuff we talked about. And until next week, everyone, keep your butt in the chair and your head in the game. The Hashtag AmWriting podcast is produced by Andrew Perella. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output, because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.
Thank you.